folks in the audience will collect the index cards, which are on the seats. If you have questions, at the conclusion of the answers to this question, candidates, you have a minute and a half to answer this question. The way this is set up, you have to talk faster for each question. So this one is about the budget for the White River National Forest. So our local forest's budget has decreased from $30 million a year in 2009 to $18 million in 2015. That's a 40% decrease in 6 years. Do you support increasing, decreasing, or maintaining current levels of funding for federal land management agencies? And please discuss any legislation or policy initiatives that you would sponsor concerning funding for management of public lands. And we'll start with Rick.
Thank you. Of course, I support increasing levels of funding. Clearly, something needs to be done to increase the budget of the White River National Forest. While demand and use has skyrocketed, their budget has been cut, has been reduced 38% in the last 5 years. We are starting to see the results of these cuts. The roads and trails on the White River are in poor condition. Staffing for field rangers has been cut. Recreation facilities like campgrounds and trailheads are in disrepair. And the Forest Service is faced with tough decision on whether to keep these places open to the public. The current trends in with budget are simply unsustainable. One of the major issues of the Forest Service budget is the amount of money that goes to fight wildfires. 15 years ago, approximately 17% of the Forest Service budget went to fighting fires. Today, it is approximately 52%. The increase in fire spending is coming at the expense of the other programs, such as recreation, wildlife, and forest restoration. Congress needs to fix this problem. Wildfires should be funded just like other natural disasters in this country. Floods and hurricane relief is funded through FEMA. Wildfires should be the same. Western Colorado counties should not feel the brunt of this huge expense. One way to increase the White River budget is to get Congress to pass legislation that allows the fees of the ski areas that the ski areas pay to remain local. Right now, ski areas on the White River National Forest pay approximately $20 million in fees. 100% of those fees go to Washington, D.C. and the General Treasury. Not one penny comes back to the White River to manage the resorts and all the people that they attract. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, I definitely believe that we should increase the funding to the Forest Service and our other federal land management agencies. A lot of the bad rap that those agencies get for not taking care of their lands has to do with the lack of funding that Mr. Beveridge just clearly laid out. Some of the things that we are doing to try and do what we can in Eagle County, we also have a reauthorization of our open space tax coming up. We're asking for that to be extended to 2040, and we're asking the voters to allow us to use a portion of those funds for trails. Pitkin County has done this all along, but Eagle County has not. A lot of our forest trails are in dire need of assistance, and we are willing to help work on those. So that we have a healthy adopt-a-trail program that we work with the Forest Service. We've been in partnership with the Land and Water Conservation Fund to help us with some of our boat ramps so that frees up some of our funding for Forest Services. And we've used some of our PILT money to help with Vail Pass in the winter when it's Armageddon up there and the emergency services folks need some help. So I definitely believe that our public lands are the backbone of our economy. They need to be funded. We need to keep that money here, keep the Forest Service funded, and we need to get wildfire funding out of the Forest Service budget and into another fund. Thanks.
Thank you. The Forest Service budget for 2016 is actually $15.5 million, which is a significant, almost 50% decrease from 2009. Yes, I think it should be increased. But I want to say that I think the Forest Service has been doing an excellent job in managing the many aspects and responsibilities of our precious natural resources with the budget cuts that they have to work with. One example of a very successful program is the volunteer Adopt-a-Trail program that I'm involved with for those of you who are not familiar with it, over in the White River Forest in the Vail Valley, we have adopted trails. We have 30 different trails that have been adopted. About 65 miles of trails have been cleaned up, cleared. Bridges are being built. It's definitely a program that has been very successful. As far as advocating for additional wilderness in Colorado, I'm always looking for more wilderness. I definitely support additional wilderness in Colorado. I grew up here. I've been to many of the wilderness areas. And yes, I want to support more wilderness. Thank you.
Thank you. I too think that the Forest Service is severely underfunded, undermanned. As my colleagues have pointed out here, a 50% reduction in their budget since 2008, a slash from $30 million to $15 million. And it shows. And what happens when there's not enough funding at the state and federal level is that the locals have to pick up the tab to get some decent services. So in Eagle County, as my colleague Commissioner Chandler Henry mentioned, last year we had an Adopt a Ranger program, and there was actually a fundraising to raise about $60,000 so that we could hire a ranger, and it wasn't through the county. This was through private citizens to help with some of the trail maintenance. And as Commissioner Chandler Henry also mentioned, just to give you a local example, we have about 700 miles of soft trails, and they have just been so neglected. We've heard them described as ditches. They're very wide. There's rogue trails. There's areas where they've just destroyed the environment, and the Forest Service doesn't have the manpower. So we've put through our open space, put our open space tax back on the ballot this year to say, can we expand this to trails, including soft trail maintenance, so that we can have a hand in maintaining the 500 miles of trails on the Forest Service land? Thank you.
Yes, I think we should increase the budget for the White River. I see it as an investment. It's an investment in our watersheds. It's an investment on wildfire mitigation. It's an investment, as others have said, in our trails and certainly in wildlife habitat and watershed health. It's ironic to me that those who argue the most strongly for a transfer of federal public lands cite the, quote, bad job that the Forest Service is doing, neglecting to add on to that this extreme budget cut. And it's not just the budget cut, but it's the reallocation of funds, as Mr. Beveridge was saying, from that kind of mitigation and management function to firefighting. Because fires have become of a much greater magnitude and much more frequent, that firefighting budget has gone up, 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 and it is not at all adequate. And of course, it's crowded out management of the forest and mitigation, ironically, of wildfire. And as others have suggested, it would be really important to think about, and it's not, I can't do it as a state legislator, but at the federal level to think about a shift over to FEMA and other ways of dealing with wildfires. But the thing we really need to do is protect that habitat, protect those watersheds, and mitigate and prevent wildfires to the extent that we can.
Yes, I agree, as others have said, that it's really a major problem that at the federal level we don't have enough funding for our forests, and that funding is dropping, for example, with the White River Forest. As Diane Mitch Bush was referring to, it's not out of being reasonable at all to say that there is a connection. It's easy to see, for me, a connection between this reduction, this repeated reduction in funding, and the fact that, well, you know, look, they're not doing a good job, and so maybe we need to take over those lands. It reminds me of a phrase that maybe some of you have heard some years, not too many years ago, where someone advocated for shrinking government until it's small enough to drown in a bathtub. And I think that's what we're seeing here. There are some folks who want to see it fail so that then they can justify their desire to take over federal lands. As already mentioned, we have fire borrowing going on. We know the risk we have in this state. In the area that I'm running for the state Senate, we have the Beaver Creek fire that's been burning northwest of Walden since June. There's a fire in the Flat Tops area. There's another one that's south of Rabbit Ears Pass that I just learned about yesterday. We just had in Summit County in Breckenridge, where I live, there was a wildfire just a few days ago within a mile of a very dense residential area. So it's not just about managing forests and protecting forests and worrying about the increased danger of wildfire, but it's also that wildland-urban interface and what happens to residential areas nearby.
Well, absolutely. We should increase the budget, and of course what the stress that the U.S. Forest Service and BLM has been under with respect to a delegation in Congress that it's all about cutting those funds and cutting those resources. We see in the White River National Forest approximately 2 million acres, one enforcement officer. Look what is going on in our forests, and it is not something that can be managed by one individual. We need to keep them safe, protect illegal grows, et cetera, et cetera. More importantly, as we see the situation where Colorado has approximately 6 million acres of standing dead timber, well, that needs to be managed. It needs to be managed around our communities. It needs to be managed in our watersheds, because what could be more threatening to our water storage and water quality and water quantity than fires? We saw that down in the Rio Grande Basin. We need to be able to, one, create jobs and opportunity when we are managing those fuels and creating a market solution with respect to biomass and other opportunities. Lastly, looking at, we need to have a Good Samaritan policy that we can work with partners throughout the state, Willow Creek by Creed. I mean, we need efforts to go in. I was in Silverton the other day. By the way, all the finger pointing and blaming of the EPA, Scott Tipton hasn't been there yet to talk to that community. They need the EPA coming in, yet his votes to cut the Superfund funding is a critical issue. And we can't be cutting the forest, cutting the Superfund at the same time, and not overturning the 1872 mining laws and make them work for our damaging watersheds.
Well, clearly, cutting the budget in half is going in the absolute wrong direction when the state of Colorado's population and tourists coming to the state to enjoy these lands is doubling. And over the next couple decades, our population is expected to double in the state. So what does that mean for the use of our outdoor spaces and recreation? And thinking also about wildfires, I've heard the statistic that for every dollar we invest in mitigation, we save for fighting fires. So clearly we need more resources in the White River National Forest to deal with the population, the popularity, and the threat of wildfires that we're facing as the climate continues to get warmer and more people are there. And I don't know, I just see a disaster looming until we can really get our arms around this situation. As one of the resolutions coming from the Wildfire Committee is a bipartisan resolution to Congress. And Gail, when you get there, I hope you read it carefully. It is to make sure that we have a line item in our federal budget to deal with wildfires so that we're not doing that fire borrowing. At the state level, I think there are also some things that we can do with our budget. As you know, severance tax dollars, many of those dollars go to the Division of Natural Resources. Those resources are diminishing, and at a time when the Supreme Court in Colorado said that we owe back taxes to BP America, I think that we can relook at that statute, keep those resources in our state budget, and make sure they get to the Department of Natural Resources as opposed to the oil and gas industry.
Complicated issue, but first you got to start understanding that we do need more money locally. That's driven by the policy and the budget process in Washington, D.C. They're not listening to us. We've been there numerous years in a row. So we took action, Garfield County. We pay for three different crews to work public lands right now, Forest Service, BLM, Eagle County is in the Eagle District, as well as the Rifle District. 18 to 24-year-olds we put to work. We take our payment in lieu of taxes, which is an assessment of $1.18 an acre from the federal government. We spend $265,000 just to pay for those kids to get out there and do soil stabilization, timber removal, campground improvements, road improvements. We have Schedule A road improvements that we do now, and we don't charge the Forest Service to do that. It's called access. And by the way, you don't have guaranteed access to public lands. You got to fight for it. The other issue is that funding, there can be. I tried to write some legislation for Washington, D.C. on the Water and Soil Conservation Act. Unfortunately, it's got many moving parts. We talk about full funding. You talk only $900 million. The actual funding for that is between $5 and $15 billion. It gets siphoned off. And we just had a monument created, which is going to negatively impact it as well outside of Maine, because it comes from offshore development, and that's where the water comes from. The other issue happens to be all the conservation easements that are being donated or sold to the federal government. There is no budget that goes with that. They cannot continue to maintain, so you're cutting budget of managements, et cetera. Many other things that I can talk about on public lands. I've been doing it for 20 years, but I don't have enough time.
Well said, John. I'm going to go a different direction on this, but it's obvious to me that I'm privy to information that the rest of the board doesn't have. In 2011, I was hired by the White River National Forest, Region 2, as a matter of fact, out of Boulder. I was the only sitting contracting, warranted contracting officer at White River National Forest. Now, in 2008 and 2009, there was a special, there's a special program in the federal government. It's called MIPRing money. In 2008 and 2009, the word went out to the federal government and the various departments where White River National Forest was having trouble with the beetle kill. So different departments throughout the agency took money out of their own operating fund and donated it to Washington, to White River National Forest to take care of the beetle kill. That is where that $330 million come from. In 2011, I was given $14 million to run that forest. That included wages and programs. That is the normal budget for the Forest Service for at White River National Forest, $14 to $16 million. I took care of the forest for $14 million. As a matter of fact, if management would have kept their hands off from the money on top and adhered to the federal acquisition regulation, not siphon the money off, I could have done it with $12 million. That additional $16 million that they're talking about in 2009, that was given to a lady by the name of Christine Schofield and Jimenez was her name. They were out of the regional too. That $16 million was supposed to be spent strictly on beetle kill removal, but it wasn't. That's why we still have the problems from misuse of funds. The truth of the matter is, ladies and gentlemen, I'm not telling you what I could do. I'm not telling you what could be done. I'm telling you what I did do for White River National Forest. I was given $14 million. It covered programs as well as wages, and it can continue to do so in the future. We just need to adhere to the federal acquisition regulations and the rules that apply to spending money. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
So should the funding be increased? I'd say absolutely. I think that our priorities should match our values, quite simply, and our values are obviously, or at least I think for most of us, whether you're right or left, are about preserving these public lands, at least in some form. I mean, even the right will agree that we want to preserve them, I suspect. So I absolutely agree we should increase it. In my business activities in the past and in my nonprofit involvements and my volunteer involvements, what I've discovered is that when people really love something, there's often a lot of different ways to cobble together the resources to care for those things. Pitkin County's done it through its open space and trails program. I was a president of a fundraiser that raised $7.5 million to build the Aspen Recreation Center. That wasn't going to be what it is now. We, a group of people, came together who wanted to make it better. We chipped in, we put in our time, our effort, we found donors, and we made it happen. There are a million nonprofits in this, and we're so blessed to have so many nonprofits in this community that care about these things. And they all, I think that we can do a better job of collaborating with those nonprofits to bring the people together. I don't think the nonprofits get the credit they really deserve for their economic boost and what they do to help us keep the assets that we love so much. I believe that, as everyone said here, look, there's more people. I mean, in the 70s and the 80s, that was the old days for me. We didn't have to worry about too many people back in the backcountry. Now we do. And we need to take care of it. We need to be increasing those maintenance budgets, not reducing them.
I can say ditto to that. I want to add a couple of things. We're lucky in Pitkin County. I want to drill it down to our county. It's nice to hear that the other counties are pitching in with these other groups that are contributing funds and raising their own money to help take care of these lands, take care of trails and eroded areas. Pitkin County does have that. We have what I thought was an unprecedented cooperation between Open Space and Trails in Aspen, Pitkin County, with the Forest Service for managing, taking care, and enforcing North Star Preserve. Our other areas that I think need that would be the super high access and heavily used places like Maroon Bells Wilderness, Four Pass Loop, and Conundrum Hot Springs. Places we're all hearing about are getting hammered by people loving it to death. And it turns out we do have a lot of people pitching in to help make this work. That doesn't seem right. And I would have to say, yes, we're doing this because we don't have the federal funding we had. So I would definitely say I would support increasing it. Thank you.
Thanks. Now we'll move to the third question. Are we collecting the questions from the audience at this point? So if you pass those down, we can just go ahead and continue the conversation. So the third question. While the U.S. Forest Service and Bureau of Land Management, and you'll have 1 minute to answer this question. While the U.S. Forest Service and Bureau of Land Management own the majority of public land in our area and directly manage them, citizens, other agencies, nonprofits, local governments, and politicians like yourselves all can engage and influence land management. So the question is, does climate change affect public lands and how? What actions, if any, do you think should be taken on public lands related to climate change? Go.
Here we go, sorry. I do believe climate change is affecting us seriously. I think it's time to stop denying it, if anyone still is. And we also need to stop the blame game. It's time to get on with creating incentives for alternative energy, for polluters to stop releasing carbon. Energy efficiency and a fee on carbon is a good place to start. We definitely need to do that. Our public lands are affected by it. Additionally, we are going to see climate refugees coming to our region. So once again, more people. Thank you. I think that's it.
So one of the things that I think is important for a county commissioner is to respect and appreciate differences, and to be courteous, and to try to listen, and to try to understand. And when I look at this issue, I absolutely believe in climate change and absolutely believe in the renewable energy future. But I also believe that it's important for us to be able to talk to everyone about this issue. And there are other reasons for us to get off fossil fuels. There are other reasons for us to stop drilling in public lands. There are good reasons around the future associated with what we're leaving behind, the environmental devastation. The costs that we're paying at the pump are nowhere near the real costs that we're incurring as a society. And I believe that we should fervently and actively do everything we can to promote renewable energy so the pressures to extract fossil fuels from public land should be reduced.
Ladies and gentlemen, the simple truth is climate change is real. It's here. It's at our doorstep. We need to deal with it. 80% of the world's population lives within 15 miles of a coastline. As coastlines increase, places like Florida and Louisiana are going to sink. And we're going to get, exactly as he said, climate refugees. It's going to make the exodus out of Syria look like a silt heyday parade. Ladies and gentlemen, it's serious. The last time we're going to have a mass, the last time mankind has seen a mass migration like what we've got to look forward to, it was led by Moses. And let's face it, it's true. It's true. In the West, we have a saying, whiskey's for drinking, water's for fighting. It's always been true, and it's going to continue to be so. We need to be prepared. That means we need to start looking at preserving the water, whether it be earthen dams or what have you. We need to be prepared for the influx of people that are going to be coming to this area. Because let's face it, when the ground starts sinking, people are going to head for high country, and it doesn't get any higher than the Colorado Rockies. Thank you.
Thank you. This is about the seventh climate change that the world has seen. It is here, yes. Do we have any control on it? About 99%, no. Can we do something about it? Absolutely. One of the biggest things that we do is create electricity, and I hate to tell you this, now you're going to laugh, is communications, and it happens to be internet, and all of the gizmos that you have leads to climate change and the increase of the temperatures. We are our own worst enemies. Turn off things, live simple, we will live longer, but the world will change, and we will have a climate change no matter what we do. Mother Nature is in control, and that will happen. Public lands, take care of them. Use them. Be respectful. Don't overuse them. I forgot to tell you, we pay for rangers for Hanging Lake, two of them. We do that simply to take care of that. Intergovernmental agency of firefighting. All that, it goes to public lands, and we try to take care as much as we can. But we, everybody in this room, and the rest of the world, is called overpopulation, convenience, and use of all the electronics in the world. That's what one of the biggest problems we have. Turn it off and live simply.
They like you. Yes, climate change is a real thing, and I'm so appreciative of real conversations going on that people aren't afraid to have on this issue, and many of you are in the audience right now. I don't even know where to start on this issue. It's an economic issue. I know the ski areas, and in House District 61, I'm proud to say I have the greatest number of ski areas in my district. And they're taking this issue really seriously. This has a huge impact on the economy of Colorado. And so they, places like Aspen Ski Company are embracing coal methane capture with mines in Somerset. Wow, that is innovative. And I didn't know it was electrical kind of devices causing it. I thought it was more emissions and some of our what we do with our air and our water. But at any rate, I think we need to, the sooner we just say, yes, we have a crisis, let's put our heads together and figure out some real solutions on how we can work together to address this in Colorado so that we can be a model for this issue. Thanks.
So there's so much to be said again on this issue, and we're seeing it really our forests transform before our eyes. One of those issues besides looking at our population double by mid-century is this issue we could potentially have 15% to 30% less water by mid-century. Let's marry those two factors and how that is going to change our landscape. Certainly that will impact our agriculture and the agricultural grazing and use on our public lands and degrade the quality of those lands. Certainly our habitats are vulnerable. We've got a lot of work to do. Look at a great institution like Rocky Mountain Biological Laboratory right over the hill. Let's use what we have already have in basic research to help us guide us through the future. And secondly, can we get a Congress to put forward a clean fire borrowing bill? They all want to take put in a special interest instead of doing the work they're supposed to be and fully funding the Forest Service to manage the issues moving forward.
Just to be clear, climate change is happening. We are living through it right now. It's not a belief system, it's science, and it is affecting towns and cities in the United States right now. Water level rising in Miami, for example, other East Coast cities, Eskimo villages that are having to actually move because of sea level rise. So we have to deal with it. And when we think about how it impacts us here on the Western Slope, it's not only the reducing water resources that are expected in the next few decades, but the increasing population that we've already talked about. The fact that the health of our forests is directly affected by this. We're seeing more beetle infestations because our winters don't get cold enough anymore to kill them off during the wintertime. We're seeing just general forest health issues. Representative Hamner talked about the ski industries. The companies are paying attention to this. They're not going to just let this happen without doing something about it. People who are speaking out against climate change are the same people who told us that the tobacco industry was safe for us and healthy. It's literally the same people. So we need to move past that and help correct this.
Climate change has a wide variety of impacts on public lands. Two major ones are snowpack snowmelt and habitat changes, as well as, of course, forest. Snowpack snowmelt. We're seeing less snow in the snowpack, and the hydrograph shows us that spring runoff occurs much earlier and at a much, much steeper regression line. What that means, then, is that the forest and ag lands are not as well irrigated as they have been in the past, which then leads to a variety of changes for plants and animals. One species that we've seen recent really good research on is the pika. One of my favorites when I first ever backpacked and was in the wilderness, and it of course is moving. It's moving its habitat because of increasing warmth and less water, and sad to say, some are arguing that it may be extinct. What can we do? I'm the vice chair of the Transportation Energy Committee, and renewables and efficiency are key things we can all do right now, and the state of Colorado has been doing. We've passed a wide variety of bills around efficiency and renewables.
I'd like to make a couple of points. First, that federal lands protect the forests that help store atmospheric carbon dioxide emissions. So if states take over our national forest, we could see increased rates of logging and reduction in the carbon sinks, and it could actually increase greenhouse gas emissions. About a year ago, I testified on the Clean Power Plan to the Senate Climate Task Force in Washington. And the Clean Power Plan is the most sweeping federal regulations that have been put forth to date, and it limits coal-fired power plants, which are the biggest greenhouse gas producing emitters. And you know that is right now stalled in the courts. I met with Congressman Tipton's office, and he said he didn't support the Clean Power Plan because of the coal industry. And I said, what about the ski industry? We're projected to lose it by mid-century. I mentioned what we've been doing with open space and the purchasing of our solar arrays. We also just completed a county climate action plan with 30 local stakeholders. We're going to reduce greenhouse gas emissions 80% by the year 2050. Thank you.
The first part of the question ends in, quote, citizens, other agencies, nonprofits, local governments, and politicians like yourselves all can engage and influence land management. I agree and support citizen action. I'd like to thank Will Rausch of the Wilderness Workshop for organizing a barbed wire pull last Sunday in Aspen. We all worked very hard and pulled about 2.5 miles of barbed wire from an elk calving area. I plan on organizing the same effort in Beaver Creek. We have about 15 miles of barbed wire that I've identified. Wildfires are the biggest problem in the forest today. The firefighting season is a month longer than it used to be, and the fires are burning hotter and consuming more acreage than ever before. Fighting wildfires now accounts for 56% of the Forest Service budget. Whether this is caused by climate change, pine beetle infestation, or careless campers, I don't know. I think that's up to the scientists to determine. We the people own the forest, and we need to protect them. As Smokey the Bear said, only you can prevent forest fires. Thank you.
Senator Schwartz mentioned the need to use science and research as we proceed forward, and I just wanted to say hooray to that. I've got two master's degrees from Duke University, and so I'm trained in analytical skills, and I think we really have to start applying that to what we're doing moving forward. I've worked in the Colorado Basin Roundtable with many of the folks in the room here to try and apply some of those science-based research to the Colorado Water Plan, to not just take the word for we need more water from the western slope, but to look at conservation and keeping the water in the headwaters counties where it belongs. Commissioner Ryan mentioned the climate action plan that Eagle County is working on. We've also joined a statewide climate group to do everything we can to reduce greenhouse emissions, to protect our forests, to keep the water in the streams, and to protect our winters and our economy.
I'd also like to touch base on scientific consensus. 97% of the climate scientists agree that climate trends, and I'm actually reading something right here, so please bear with me. It's obvious through science that this is happening. Changing climate is affecting our forests. The fire seasons are longer and more volatile. We need to work with our federal partners to make our forests as resilient to these changes as possible. It starts with common sense. It starts with people's educating their families, their communities. The people direct can make the change. It's as somebody said, with all the technology that we have, we are creating a lot of this problem. So let's get educated. Let's each do our own part.
Thanks. So it's just about 8 o'clock, and we had said we would take 10 minutes for audience questions. If the timers would, let's do two questions, and not everybody's going to get to answer. So, you know, raise your hand, share the microphones. If the timers would, 4 minutes into the first question, just raise the yellow, and then that's the last person who will speak on that question. I think we can get a couple questions in. So the first one is this, and I like this. We've heard a lot about how we will protect public lands for the benefit of recreation and people. But how do you protect public land? How do you plan to protect public lands for the sake of animals and ecosystems? Specifically in Colorado, we have a lot of sensitive species that are in direct competition with recreation and resource extraction, lynx and sage grouse, for example. How can we find a balance?
I'll start. So let's look at identifying places where we have unique habitat and we have the opportunity to protect landscapes from fragmentation, roads, oil and gas operations, and that's where we take care of our wildlife. Again, it's the state that oversees the wildlife, and in Colorado, we've already lost 40% of our mule deer population because of fragmenting our landscape, and I think that's a critical issue of being able to identify special areas and preserve special areas. Not all areas are to be made available for oil and gas development.
In addition, the kinds of partnerships we've seen with the Gunnison and the greater sage grouse are really critical in terms of getting environmentalists and ranchers, recreationists together, working on plans, and again, getting back to specific areas where we know there's good habitat for a wide variety, whether it's lynx, whether it's sage grouse, whether it's much larger species. I think it's really important, as Gail, future Congresswoman Schwartz said, to identify the areas, but also to get all the locals working together.
I think it's really a lesson for us to look at some of what we've learned, for example, in Yellowstone National Park, where they recognize when certain species are removed from the ecosystem, it impacts not only other animals, but plant life and river flows and wetlands and so forth. And we need to recognize that. We often miss that in Colorado, that there's this interconnection between all of our ecosystems. And so whether it's more moose coming into Breckenridge now where I live, we know we've done something to disrupt them, that we have so much more there now. We're doing some work, at least beginning to, on wildlife corridors north of Silverthorn, for example. Not a cheap thing to do, but at least we're beginning to recognize that we have to do some things about migration patterns and allowing those to continue, protecting habitat, and also looking at, well, what are we doing already to disrupt our animals and our ecosystems, and what do we need to do to correct some of that?
To add to that, I'd like to chime in. We just need to put a little bit of common sense in how we go about doing our business back there when we get in that backcountry. For example, those oil pads. Have you ever looked at the way that those oil companies set up the access roads to the oil pads? They're set up on a grid system. They don't take into account the topography. They're literally a grid system, just like that CMU wall over there. A third grader could design that. Let's bring in some professionals. What we'll do is we'll cut in those roads where those roads have access to multiple drill pads and so forth, thus allowing more natural habitat for the animals that are there. That's what we need to do. Little bit of common sense when we step into the backcountry. I demand it of my Cub Scouts every time we go back. We need to clean that area. We need to keep it clean. These guys throwing out their trash out the window. I mean, something that simple. I can teach a 7-year-old Cub Scout about how he has to pack out his poop and toilet paper when we go on a camping trip because he has to adhere to leave no trace. And these grown oil riggers are throwing their chip bags and stuff just directly out. It's the little things. Let's use common sense. Let's respect our natural, our public lands, and we can get the job done together.
Of wolves in back into the state of Colorado. They have been coming in from New Mexico and Wyoming. And my philosophy has always been follow the natural world. If those wolves are coming back here, that's the natural world. I think we should support that. Thank you.
All right. Next question. And if the folks who didn't answer the first one get a chance this time, that's great. Question is, if we turn over federal lands to the states, do you think this will increase the extraction of oil and gas, minerals, or logging? And do you think this is a good idea?
Test, it's working. I do think that we would see an increase in opening up of these lands, which we have held sacred so far, and I'm very concerned about it. Second part of the question, maybe that's it.
My answer is an obvious yes. That's exactly what I would anticipate happening. And to the previous question, I would say, with the added growth and the added impacts to the outback, we've got to be more conscious of our impacts on the habitat. We've got to really create sacred areas and expand those and respect them. That's another reason why we need more maintenance funds and more enforcement funds, because those are the kinds of funds that help preserve those areas.
The only organizations, businesses with deep enough pockets to buy public lands would be oil and gas, so I would guess we would definitely see an increase of that where those resources are available. Eagle County is supporting the Continental Divide Wilderness Bill that Representative Pola, Senator Bennett, and others are introducing, and I think that keeping those lands keeps the wildlife from being fragmented, and that's something that we are strongly in support of.
The answer is absolutely you would have an increase in development, because right now 90% of your development is on private lands. Public lands have been put off limits already by the federal agencies and the policies. Of course, if the state was to get it, it would take an action of two houses of Congress, House and the Senate, and then a bill signed by the president. How many people think that can happen in today's society, that they can agree to transfer lands to allow that to happen anyway? The answer is very, very slim. Let's get real, and let's not get it so emotional we lose sight of common sense.
I think if you look at Scott Tipton's House Resolution 866 in 2015, that clearly was a move that would transfer and make responsible for leasing, permitting, regulating oil and gas to the states through the Oil and Gas Commission. But it also exempted all federal requirements for reviews for antiquities, for NEPA, for endangered species. So let's call it, he called it the Federal Land Freedom Act. Well, that sounds like a lot of freedom when it comes to developing public lands.
Ladies and gentlemen, the simple truth is anytime throughout history, whether it's in this country or any other country, the privatization of federal lands has been done so for one purpose and one person purpose only. It is done in order to sidestep environmental regulations. You want to see an example of this? Go back and look at Venezuela, what happened to them in the 1950s. American oil companies, the same oil companies that are sitting on our doorstep right now, went into Venezuela, and by the time they left in the mid-70s, Venezuela looks like the Los Angeles tar pits because they didn't have restrictions. Go back and look at it. It's historic. That's all I have to say on that matter.
I think if you transfer the lands to the state or private entities, we as the public aren't going to have a say. I think the Forest Service is set up right now for a great public input process, and the uses, although mixed, that's the best we're going to do. I don't think you're going to have that input if it goes to a different entity.
Okay, let's call it a night. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to the candidates.